Brenda is a priest that I know who is the rector of a large Episcopal church in Manhattan. I got to know Brenda when I was in my former parish in the Diocese of New York. And before becoming the rector of this church in Manhattan, Brenda had been in a couple parishes as what is called an interim priest. Interim service is when a parish has their rector is either retired or resigned due to another call to another church. That period between that rector leaving and the calling of the new rector is called the interim period. And there are priests who will go to a parish as the interim priest to serve that parish during that time of transition. It's a very particular ministry. And Brenda had done this a couple of times. In my former parish, she had come to the neighboring parish where she was going to be the interim. And I heard about her coming to town, called her up. We got together for lunch, and it was a chance to meet her and got to know her a bit over the years since. But Brenda told me the story about a church prior to the one that she was at that time, where she served as the interim. She said she was called to the parish, and the senior warden said to her, you know, we welcome you, and is there anything that we can do to help you? And she said, well, I'd like to meet with somebody to sort of go over how you do things on Sunday, what goes on at the altar, all the movement, all the choreography. Every church has its own particulars. So the senior warden said, that'd be fine. We'll work that out. What's a good day for you? How about Saturday, the day before her first Sunday? So someone met with her, who is the person who sort of knows all the liturgical things of the parish, and they met, and the person showed Brenda where to get vested. Here's where we clergy get vested, and we gather then at the doors of the church. The torchbearers and the crucifer meet there, and during the processional hymn, it's our custom to process down the aisle. And when we come to the altar rail, our custom is to reverence the altar by bowing, and then heading up. And the torchbearers in this church, the torches were at the side of the altar, So he says the acolytes will go up with their torches and put them in the stand, and then they touch the candlestick holder on the altar, and they go to their seats. The candlestick holders on the altar were like bronze, a more traditional kind of look. So Brenda said, okay. And she said, and the celebrant, the presider of the Eucharist, comes up, reverences the altar, and as you go up to your seat to sit, you touch the candlestick holder, and then you go to your seat. So Brenda's, okay. You know, there were other things that they went through, and she felt pretty confident. So the first Sunday comes, and sure enough, everybody, as was planned, everybody lines up, they process down the aisle, and sure enough, the torchbearers put their torches in the stand, they touch the candlestick holder, go to their seat, and Brenda comes up and reverences the altar and touches the candlestick holder, goes to her seat. So it was about 6 weeks, 8 months there, and the former rector who had retired gave her a call to see how things were going. And she said, oh, it's going really well, and, you know, they really miss you dearly here. You know, your time here is really valued, and it's just an honor for me to be here. I think this is going to be a great time as I'm here until they call the new rector. So the former rector said, you know, do you have any questions or anything? And she said, well, yeah, I have this question about Sunday. So when we walk in, I'm told that the torchbearers go up and they put their candle in the stand, they touch the candlestick holder and go to their seat, and then I come up as the presider and touch the candlestick holder and go to my seat. He starts to laugh. He says, oh my God. You know, a few years ago, we made a decision. The area around the altar had been sort of a bare floor. We decided to put in carpeting. And I noticed every time I'd walk on that carpet, I'd build up static on my shoes. And whenever the first time I touched the chalice or the plate, I'd get this kind of static shock. So I used to just come up in the very beginning and just kind of get it over with and then go to my seat. And so I can't believe that has become part of the liturgy. So that was one of the first things that Brenda changed as time went on. Explaining, you know, probably no one really probably noticed it, to tell you the truth. But that was something that was changed. You wonder sometimes how many things that we do come from that kind of a history. You just never know. But that story, that memory comes to me as I read our gospel reading today. The story is of the scribes and the Pharisees coming to Jesus And they're saying to, they're upset with Jesus because Jesus and his followers, it says, are not washing their hands before a meal. Now, that they're not necessarily referring to, you know, washing hands with soap and water and cleaning up. It's more of a ritual. It was a ritual that was done. A faithful Jew would wash their hands before a meal. And Jesus' disciples are not doing that. And the scribes and the Pharisees are very upset about it because Jesus is a rabbi. He's part of the Jewish tradition. And you are defiling, you know. And Jesus has this challenging statement, you know, where you go to the end where he says, you know, it's not what comes into a person that defiles them, but what comes out. You know, the way we treat each other, the way we look at our world, the way we function in our world and interact. And there's so much more to this. You get this almost frustration level in the way Mark writes this about Jesus. And we read that and could say to ourselves, yes, Jesus, challenging these people for these silly customs that they follow. But I don't know. I read that and I wonder if we are more like those scribes and Pharisees than we want to admit. Let me go back a little bit in history. So where did that come from? Scripture scholars have different suggestions and different observations, but one that I recently read is that the Hebrew people built the first temple. It's recorded in some of the Hebrew scriptures. I think it's in 1 Kings. Don't quote me on that. But the first temple is built probably around the 900s, and it was this grand temple. It was beautiful. It was gorgeous. It was the place where God dwelt. There was even described in there this idea that the presence of God became ever before the people. They just saw this presence, this fury, this fire, this powerful presence of God in this temple. It's just described this elaborate way. And they believed that this temple, this is where God dwelt. This is where God dwelt. Can you imagine that sense of that building? In the 500s, that temple was destroyed. The Hebrew people were thrown out of their land. The Babylonians came in and destroyed them and took the Hebrew people out of their land into what is referred oftentimes as the Babylonian exile. The Babylonian exile. And that temple is just totally destroyed. Can you imagine that, what that must have been like for those people? Where's God? Where's God dwelling? Where are we? Where is this God? Some of the greatest psalms that are in our scriptures were written during that time of exile, that time of loneliness, that time of just utter confusion and doubt and wonder. Eventually, they come back to their land, speeding history here a little bit. They come back to the land, and they build another temple. They build another temple. And they build it, and this is probably pretty much the part of the temple that Jesus would have experienced when Jesus walked among us, Jesus of Nazareth. They build this temple. But interesting, one scripture scholar points out, though, they build that temple, but there never really is a description of any powerful kind of presence of God, of this sense of, an awesome sense of God being there. What in Hebrew is called a Shekinah. It's a great word, the Shekinah. It's a Hebrew word for this awesome presence of God. That's what that experience would have been described in the first temple, the Shekinah of God. And they built the second temple, and it's like, so where's the Shekinah? And they're looking, they're waiting. Some suggest that it could have been from that experience, many others, that there began to be this kind of need to have ritual and custom and ways of doing things, this idea of coming together, forming ourselves as a people again, so God will notice us, God will come to us. It's, you know, it's the first, over the years I've talked about the three stages of religion. The first stage is the belonging stage, where you belong to a religious tradition, and it has its customs, its laws. I mean, we do, we Episcopalians, we have lots of customs and things we do. And they let us know who we are, and they're important. The second stage is what oftentimes referred to as the prophetic stage. You begin to experience God from within. That belonging experience leads you to some kind of a sense of the holy, and you begin to live your life from there. And then the final stage of religion is that wisdom tradition, where you know the belonging system, what you're experiencing, sometimes bump against each other, and you begin to feel more comfortable living in the tension. It's not an either-or anymore. It's a both this and that. Jesus certainly, I think, was in that place. He was also prophetic. But I think this is an instance where he's inviting these folks who are following these laws and traditions to perhaps step deeper. They're following these customs, and they're looking at Jesus and his followers and saying, you're defiling us. You're not doing what we're supposed to do. I mean, try to look at it from their point of view. How is God kind of come among us if we don't do those things? What's interesting is, I think, that if those customs and ways of being were meant to somehow invite God to look for that Shekinah, it was right in front of them. It was right in front of them in Jesus of Nazareth. Jesus was the long-awaited one. Jesus was the Shekinah. Jesus had been to the temple, and yet they couldn't see that. They couldn't see that. Those traditions hadn't led them to a deeper level, to a deeper experience. So blinded were they by that. Jesus never tells them, you know, well, don't wash your hands anymore, don't follow those traditions. Jesus never, he came from that tradition as well. But it led him to a deeper experience. What Jesus, in many ways, is inviting those scribes and Pharisees to do is to have a different viewpoint, a different way of understanding. But I would suggest a deeper understanding. You know, as one of my spiritual guides, Richard Rohr, says, every viewpoint is a view from a point. And sometimes you have to change from this point, to perhaps view the same thing, but see it differently. To enter into the viewpoint of the scribes and Pharisees, they're at this point. Here's how they see. Jesus inviting them to another point, and perhaps another point of view. And yet they resist that. Do we resist that? I think we do, all of us. We want to stay looking at things from our viewpoint. It's true in Washington. It's true in North Carolina. It just seems to have become something in our time, in our culture, where I am staying in my point of view. And Jesus never calls us in our journey. You never hear Jesus say, come here, stand here. What is Jesus always saying? Come walk with me. Come move with me. You know, as you move, your point changes. And as your point changes, your view changes. You experience new things. You take those things in. You learn. You grow. You deepen your faith. Jesus is not telling him to let go of those things as much as just move with me. See them from over here. And perhaps those rituals will take on a deeper meaning. But come with me. Walk with me. Into the dream and the vision that God has for this world. And as we gather today, I just offer those thoughts to you. Some of them are just touching candlestick holders that are easy to let go of, but some of them are deeply part of who we are. Explore the meaning of those. They were passed down by our ancestors before us, and they have significance and meaning, but don't let them blind us to the powerful presence of God right in front of us. Be willing to perhaps change a viewpoint once in a while. At least step into someone else's point to view it how they're viewing it. And then say to them, how about coming over to my point a little bit and viewing how I see it? And maybe we find a new point to stand together and live into the dream and the vision that God has for this world.